A political attack in the 2015 race for mayor. Did Joe Hogsett violate federal law? Ed Delaney questions Greg Ballard. Is the mayor's crime plan misguided? The state resumes paying adoption subsidies. Taxpayer money will help fix up the natatorium. And Andre Carson's job fair gets noticed on Capitol Hill. That plus Gen Con and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 15, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Republicans tried to damage the reputation of Democrat Joe Hogsett. Marion County GOP Chairman Kyle Walker put out a list of questions regarding possible political activity conducted by Hogsett when he was U.S. Attorney. Walker believes Hogsett was putting together a campaign for mayor while he worked for the federal government.
Did Joe Hogsett violate federal law by engaging in political activity while he was still the United States Attorney? There's a mountain of evidence to suggest that he did.
I don't know what he did other than issue a press release, frankly. So I'm not sure what grand effort that takes.
And that's Democratic Chairman Joel Miller in reference to the political announcement Hogsett made four days after leaving his federal post. Was Kyle Walker's attack a swing and a miss? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender, editor of the StateHouseFile.com. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shellett. Tim Berry, was that a strategic mistake by Kyle Walker?
It was a happy birthday hit. Just a few weeks ago when Dan Parker was here, you asked him the question if he was backing away from running because Joe Hogsett was going to run, and he got that Cheshire Cat grin. Yep. You know, he's been looking to run for office ever since he lost his last election a decade ago.
We made the point on this program that there seemed to be a fair amount of choreography between Dan Parker and Joe Hogsett and Evan Bayh. Yet Kyle Walker is suggesting that he violated the Hatch Act, which is about using federal time and federal equipment to campaign, is it not?
Well, the question...
You can tell somebody I'm considering running for mayor without violating the Hatch Act.
The questions are out there. What was he doing and when was he doing it and who was he talking to? And I think that's what Kyle was bringing up. He's been very aggressive about looking to run for the next office, Joe has.
Tim Berry not among them. There are Republicans who think that this was a mistake.
Oh, it was clearly a swing and a miss. It's greasy kid stuff. If they thought they had something, if they really thought that he had violated the Hatch Act, they would have brought a charge. They didn't do that. They just did a little press conference with innuendo and supposition. He's allowed to talk to his friends and compatriots about what his future is, and obviously Parker fits into that category. So it's not only is it a swing and a miss, but what it shows is how nervous the incumbent is. And he has not announced his intention to seek re-election, and he knows that he's the accidental mayor, Jim, and so he is very, very nervous about the upcoming campaign and shows a vulnerability that you wouldn't expect from a two-time incumbent.
I actually disagree completely with the idea that it was a swing and a miss. I mean, at this point, especially before Labor Day when people aren't paying a lot of attention, the main thing is just to get it out there. And I thought they did a good job of that. I mean, I heard the story on the radio. It was the headline on the IndyStar website. indicated that they were accusing him of a federal crime. And in some ways,
it's not a crime.
Well,
it's a violation of the Hatch Act, the remedy of which is that you lose your federal position.
But this is, if
you're still employed, you can be suspended.
You can be disciplined.
To me, this is the big issue. I mean, they were accusing him of breaking a federal law, essentially, and that's no evidence. But I completely agree with you. But okay. That's why I think it was an amazing hit, because they managed with only innuendo to get this story out here. I mean, the fact that we're talking about it here today means that the Republicans accomplished what they aimed to, even though they have absolutely no evidence to indicate that he did something wrong.
In the world of Indiana politics, it was a slow news week. Joel Hogsett called this partisan political gamesmanship and brushed it off. Have we heard the last?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's for the reasons that Leslie articulated. I think there was some value in a week where, you know, you had an opportunity to throw a little mud and maybe some of it would stick. And even if everything is posed with a big question mark behind it, it still gets people thinking and talking. And when you
and
have
as Leslie said, it creates headlines in newspapers and on websites that you might be able to use in an ad later, right?
I mean, that's the, you know, when you work for a media organization, I mean, one of the things you hate the most is when a headline goes up, and you, especially if it's not quite the way you would have written it, or God, all you think about is, oh, I'm going to see that in a 30-second ad.
Well, and especially when you're the law and order candidate, you're the squeaky clean Boy Scout. That's the sort of the image that's being presented as a possible bid unfolds here, with a focus on cleaning up Indianapolis and combating crime. So anything you can do to sort of raise questions probably has some value. Now, the only danger, of course, when you hear Kyle Walker talk about a mountain of evidence, he must be referring to, say, Indiana's highest peak over there by Richmond, where you have to get out some with survey equipment to actually see it, because I'm not sure even he would be able to cite even a molehill of evidence because it is clearly circumstantial.
Still with the mayor's race, Hogsett's fellow Democrat Ed Delaney attacked the new crime plan put out by GOP Mayor Greg Ballard this week. It's a way for Delaney to send the message that he's in the race to stay. He appeared in front of the Central Library to make the case that the Ballard preschool plan would take money away from school districts and the library to create what he called an inadequate plan. He wants a comprehensive preschool plan with state funding.
Let's have a debate about who should run it, how should run it, and how to fund it. Let's not just grab somebody else's money and announce a victory. And in the process, of course, raise taxes on some 40% of our people.
And Delaney, why isn't he focusing on Hogsett instead of Ballard?
Don't you think he looked distinguished in that? Well, first of all, Hogsett's not a candidate.
He filed an exploratory committee,
which obviously means he has not made up his mind. Ed's focus is going to continue to be on Ballard. I mean, we're 7 years into the administration, and he finally recognizes the fact that he has a crime problem. His party controls, with overwhelming numbers, the legislature and the governor's office. If he had used his time wisely, he could have been over at the State House lobbying for comprehensive preschool for all the citizens of the city of Indianapolis. He didn't. He spent his time over there using his political clout to consolidate his power. That's all he was interested in doing, was consolidating his power, not the citizens. And now he's stumbling towards having some kind of program to deal with the problems Indianapolis has.
Greg Ballard likes to tell people that he doesn't like politics. He likes to deal with policy. He cannot enjoy the fact that this stuff is this high profile 15 months out from the election.
Well, obviously there is no unity in the Democrat Party in 2015 right now. And if, Ann, you want to believe that Joe Hogsett's not a candidate, you can try and believe that. But, obviously there is contention within the party. And
based on what? Based on the fact that there's more than one candidate who wants
controversy
to beat Ballard?
There's controversy out there. Greg Ballard has presented a proposal, a comprehensive plan. And that's what happens when you're the leader out there.
Systems and the library,
when you're
public
the leader out there, I've not
the
seen anyone else
it.
Propose a plan to
you
counteract
will.
It.
You will. A much better plan.
Certainly not in the General Assembly last year, I didn't
hear
it.
Well, where was your mayor? Where was he talking to his governor and his party over there about
what
we needed?
Your candidate was a member of the General Assembly.
John,
yeah,
is,
Ed Spills really get hurt as the minority.
Let's try John. Greg Ballard's crime plan, is that a winner?
It has gotten high marks, I think, from individuals of both party, with both party affiliations, people active in the community who say they value the broad approach that's being taken, dealing with education, with sort of the social landscape that could help set the stage for crime, especially in youth who might feel hopeless otherwise. So there, I think there is broader support for it than one might expect with an election 15 months away. Now, it may be that there are more detractors coming forward when the line in the sand is drawn, but for now, it does seem as if it's getting decent marks.
Leslie, what do you make of all this activity so far out?
Well, I think that the candidates that are talking are taking advantage of the fact that Indianapolis is in a situation where crime is a huge problem, and any activity right now just exacerbates the problems for the mayor. He does face huge public criticism over the fact that crime in Indianapolis has reached, you know, problem proportions here. I mean, where things aren't good. And so, of course, you would expect that those candidates, whether they're technically in the race or not, are going to be out there talking about this stuff. And it is a concern, going back to your original question, it is a concern for Greg Ballard that people are running as hard as they are right now.
And when you know, back in 89, the commissioner of corrections said, if you give me the number of at-risk children right now, I can predict the number of prison beds you're going to need in 20
second
years.
Grade.
By second grade.
Yes.
And so nobody argues that preschool, particularly for at-risk children, is good. The problem is funding it from existing education sources, hospitals and libraries, is crazy. And on top of that, you get the situation where you're only doing 1,300 out
but
of the tens of thousands.
The question
it's a
is,
step.
Is something better than nothing?
Right.
Yeah,
and
well, that's the argument of the Republican Party all the time.
And it's not as if he has a ton of control over bringing in a lot more state money in order to do something
but
like
this. But he
didn't
even ask for it, Leslie, did he? He didn't go to the legislature that his party controls and say, we need this in Indianapolis.
That's fair, although I don't think it would have made a difference.
Moving on.
We don't know.
The Pence administration agreed to resume subsidies this week to families who adopt special needs children. The subsidies of up to $28 per child per day were stopped in 2009. Jeremy Clay has five special needs girls and welcomes the change in policy.
Can you imagine your life without these kids?
No, they're wonderful. We've had a great time together. It's been 3 years, and they're part of our family. Stretching everything. Three of them need orthodontics. One of them could possibly continue needing counseling. That's
expensive.
Expensive. All expensive stuff.
Leslie Weidenbender, what's behind this change in policy?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. Of course, Mike Pence has been a longtime advocate of adoption. And so I'm not surprised that this is something he's interested in. But the state is facing a lawsuit over this, and the plaintiff in this made a pretty good case. The state's been signing these contracts saying, we'll give you this subsidy if we have the money. The state has said in one of its briefs, hey, we don't have the money. The legislature didn't give it to us. But in the meantime, it's been in the news that the state has a $2 billion surplus, and that department in particular has been reverting money. So I don't think it was looking very good for the administration.
So they resume these payments, but they're not retroactive. Should they be retroactive?
Well, I think that's what the plaintiffs would argue, and I'm sure I haven't seen their attorney quoted on this topic yet, but I would presume that there won't be satisfaction until they're made whole, or what they perceive to be made whole. And you do wonder if now this does bolster their argument, and I agree that it was done for a lot of reasons, including perception. But now if the state sees fit to do it, it's kind of hard to say what happened, why wasn't it that way before, especially since arguably the dollars do exist, whether it's this pot or that pot, they're accessible, and I think that will be the push.
Why did it take a lawsuit to bring this to light?
Well, it was the right thing to do. As Leslie said, the governor, in his State of the State speech in January, talked about being the adoption governor and wanting to make Indiana the most adoption-friendly state there is. It was the right thing to do to take these people off of the wait list. They've been providing those benefits for those that were already under the program but they've been waitlisted since that point in time, since 2009.
How big a bill would it be to make these payments retroactive?
You know, that's something the General Assembly is going to have to come back in January and look at.
You think they will?
It's $10 million to do it this year, and we're talking about several years.
So 6 years.
We're talking about a substantial amount of money, tens of millions of dollars.
Right, but it is the right thing to do to make it retroactive. And I agree that the lawsuit was the trigger. But the Democrats in the Senate have been asking for this since 2009. And they have been every single year stepping forward and saying it's the right thing to do. So it should be retroactive. The state can't contract and promise and then not deliver, particularly when this is a not only more humane way of dealing with children with special needs, but it's something that the governor wants to encourage. I give him credit for stepping forward now, but I think it needs to be retroactive.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should the Pence administration pay adoption subsidies retroactively to 2009? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only if ordered to by a judge. Last week's question was, what makes Loretta Rush a good choice for Chief Justice? 15% said experience, 14% said gender, 6% said demeanor, 65% said all of the above. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The effort to restore the Indiana University Natatorium to its past glory is getting a boost this week. The Natatorium needs an overhaul, and it was already scheduled to receive $10 million from IU and $10 million from the Lilly Endowment. Now the Capital Improvement Board is chipping in $5 million in taxpayer dollars. The Natatorium is the biggest and fastest indoor pool in the country, but in recent years, events have gone elsewhere due to maintenance issues. John Schwannis, is that a problem that taxpayers should solve?
Well, the notion, of course, is that taxpayers will win in this deal. You pay a little bit to restore this facility to its past glory, as you put it, but you get, in theory, and certainly the evidence would suggest there's reason to believe this is going to happen, because it has in the past, lots of money from events that are taking place here. You know, Indianapolis became the amateur sports capital in part by investing in top-notch facilities. And I think it's been great on a reputational basis and has been good for the economy. But, I mean, that's a facility that was built for, what, the Pan Am Games in 87, so it's probably 30 years old. And 30 years can take a lot of wear and tear on anyone or anything, unless you're Jim Shella, who I should point out is celebrating a birthday today. How's that for a very natural?
Thank you, John.
Are you 30 as well?
I'm a little older, long way around the barn there. All right. this is an unusual payment, though, because the CIB generally supports facilities that it operates, and it doesn't operate the Natatorium. The Sports Corporation gets this money.
That's true, but there are just a ton of events that happen at the Natatorium. I mean, we hear about some of the big ones when there's an Olympic trial there or something, but I'll tell you, that is a very busy building, and it brings in a lot of people. If you spend any time downtown, it is amazing the number of times you can tell that there's a big event going on there because of all the college swimmers or other swimmers who are downtown, and so there's no doubt that there's a big economic impact on the city from this facility.
The vote on the Capital Improvement Board was 5-2. The two no votes came from Democrats. Maggie Lewis, who's president of the City County Council, said they're already getting $10 million, and that should be enough. But that $10 million from the city goes to improve streets on the IUPUI campus.
Well, you have obviously the property tax freeze and the other aversion to anything makes the city and every city, not just Indianapolis, strapped for cash. And when you don't have enough police and you don't have an adequate preschool program you're proposing, it's pretty hard to stand up in front of voters. And I agree about the economic benefit for that. But many of the voters there will never see the inside of the Natatorium. But they do see the holes in their streets. They do know there are enough police on the streets. And it's hard to... can be hard to justify that vote.
You don't think that money should go to the Natatorium?
No, I'm not saying whether it should or it shouldn't. I'm just saying it's a difficult vote for them to make. That's all. I just hope that if they do the Natatorium over, they also do the parking garage over, which is a disaster.
Wow. Is this a good expenditure?
You know, it's been a gem in the city of Indianapolis for years, and we need to make it shine again. to keep the individuals coming back to our community and provide an opportunity for some of our local athletes to train and become Olympic athletes. The other benefit is the bylines that you see in newspapers and stories across the globe of talking about events here in Indianapolis, and that's what makes Indianapolis the amateur sports capital so important.
Congressman Andre Carson's job fair is now part of the sales pitch for the Democratic jobs plan on Capitol Hill. 78 companies took part in the job fair last week. This week, Carson was featured on a conference call put together by party leaders as a way to demonstrate that Democrats are spending the summer break trying to rebuild the middle class. Carson's job fair also wins praise from local employment counselor Latoya Mason.
The difference is that they're expecting at this, the Andre Carson job fair, they were expecting to make sure that most of the people who made contacts with employers were going to get a fair shot at actually being considered.
Everyone knows that our country works best when we can build an economy that works for everybody.
And that's Representative Carson on a conference call led by Democratic Whip Steny Hoyer. Tim Berry, will this help the Make It in America Jobs Act get through Congress?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, Luke Messer's had two jobs fairs. Marlon Stutzman has one. It's been something that our members of Congress have done during this period of time in the summer months, and it's something they should be doing. But when they're back in Washington, they should also be focusing on the job-creating policies. You know, let's focus on the efforts of the Keystone Pipeline and creating jobs and lowering utility rates. That's what's really going to move the economy forward.
I thought it was interesting, though, that they were holding up Andre's job fair as an example of what needs to be done, but they're trying to sell legislation, and he doesn't need legislation to do this.
No, but, I mean, it does point out the need that you know, obviously unemployment is down, but we still need good-paying jobs. We had an event for Congressman Carson at our house, and he was talking about how successful this was, how encouraged they were by it, and how the employers responded so positively. The more of that happens in Indiana, the better, because obviously we need to do something to get our economy jump-started in this state when our wages keep falling compared to the national average.
Congress is on an August break. Some people call it a recess. Some people call it a vacation. The Democrats on this call called it the work period. What's the proper...
It's definitely the time when they kickstart their campaigns. I'm not sure what the right word for it is, but that's what most of them are back home doing. Part of kickstarting your campaign is doing things for voters, for constituents, and that includes things like job fairs and town hall meetings and those kinds of things, and that's what they're back home doing.
Democrats are in a bad position in the House of Representatives. Likely to change anytime soon?
You know, it's... So many of the districts, the way they're drawn, what did I see the other day, the analysis through gerrymandering, there are so few competitive districts, U.S. House districts in the country. It takes...
And maybe one in Indiana.
It takes significant economic either upheaval or either ups or downs or some threat to national security, it seems to me, to really... move the numbers significantly.
Those computer-generated districts are a disaster. The majority of the votes cast the last time were for Democratic candidates, and look at the margins. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Finally, Gen Con is in town. Up to 160,000 people arrived this week with their own unique sense of style. Some people dress up for the games they're playing, others for pure fun. It is the biggest event since the NRA convention. Here's spokesperson Stacia Kirby.
Gaming is really about people interacting with people. It's people who love to socialize, and I think that is different than when people think of gaming, computer gamers, where they're individual. This is people meet from across the country who get to come together once a year and play with people who maybe they talk during the year, but they meet up at all these gaming events.
And Eleni, do those people fit in here?
Well, I'm really happy to have them in contrast to the NRA, so I think it's great. 160,000 people spending money in Indianapolis, what's not to like?
Shooting toy guns.
Toy guns are much better than the real thing.
Gen Con really has become quite an event here. It changes.
It's fantastic.
It changes the culture in downtown for a couple of days.
It's fantastic. Sun King Brewery even created their own beer for the event, the Froth of Con. Just for this weekend.
Have you tried it? Is it any good?
I haven't tried it yet.
Oh, okay.
But maybe for Jim's birthday I will.
Well, I was going to say, I'm glad you explained that video, because I thought that was a video from your party last night. That's what I thought.
Three birthday references. Thank you.
Four, actually.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this
week.
Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, the singing John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.